Hey, welcome to the Toronto Today podcast. My name is Greg Brady, host of Toronto Today, which you can hear on the radio 5:30 to 9. But we put this podcast together for you to capture the day's highlights. Today, April 23rd, Scott Reed weighs in on the Toronto Police Services and the implication of wanting the verdict to go a different way, which came in the statement from Myron Demkew. It came from the mouth of Myron Demkew on Sunday, and he hasn't exactly walked it back in 48 subsequent hours and counting.
There will be time to talk about what the next steps are, but I don't think the police and the administration of justice should be waiting for us. I think they can do some soul searching. Whether or not we do anything, they need to do some soul searching about some of the decisions that were made in the course of this investigation and this prosecution.
That's Nader Hassan. I think he's right about that. And time will tell whether Umar Zamir will pursue any other legal action. But there certainly is a bit of a pathway towards it. There's sort of some foundations that are set, and I think they've been set since Sunday. And you might say, who can blame him? We'll see if indeed that ends up being true. We're talking obviously about a twist that we didn't expect yesterday morning at 9 o'clock. We didn't know if police would take this seriously. And Myron Demkew, though his words conflicted many, snapped the finger and quickly called for the OPP to review the Toronto police conduct. Now, about the judges' concerns about the potential for getting their stories straight together, the part where they're all in the same room together writing out their statements. And I get that you would never, I'm not affixing the comparison to three guys get arrested for robbing a bank. You'd never let them sit together too long or too often or at all and let them get their story straight. But there obviously is a little bit of suspicion here, or a credible judge, a credible justice like the one that just handled this case would never say that, to say they're all wrong. They're all wrong in exactly the same fashion, which makes her wonder whether or not they colluded to tell the same stories. And if they did that, got on the stand, swore to tell the truth and nothing but the truth, then they committed perjury. We have to be careful. This is alleged perjury at that. But there's a lot of things that don't pass the smell test for an awful lot of people. Scott Reed's a lawyer and partner at Edward H. Royal & Partners, and I found his tweets fascinating and educational, and he weighed in on the process as well. Good morning, Scott. Thanks for joining Toronto Today.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And you laid this out, and you found probably the same thing many people did, that the Myron Demkew comments right away, if we're to believe in justice, if we're to believe that we put our fate or the fate of another man or woman in the hands of 12 of our peers, there was a very ambiguous comment from not just a random citizen or even from the grieving widow, but from the leader of the biggest police force in the country. And as you put, translation, the entire TPS had hoped an innocent man would be wrongfully convicted based upon perjured evidence of several of our officers. That is how it landed for you and many others.
It is. It is. Could it have been more clear? Sure. But geez, the impression that was certainly left was that the officer, in hindsight, or the chief, having heard the verdict, wishes the jury had gone the other way. And that's just grossly inappropriate.
Yeah, there's a way, isn't it? If you're struggling with your emotion, there's a way to compartmentalize and say, this is how I feel. This is the agony I'm in now. But we respect the system. We move on, and the verdict is the verdict. That wasn't what came out of the chief's mouth on Sunday, and that's not even in his revised statement yesterday how it lands.
No, not at all.
What does that do to trust in not just the process, because we're talking about trust in law enforcement, but Scott, we also can take the leap over the hurdle and say we not only have to trust the cops, that's a given, we have to trust the justice system as well, that it isn't influenced.
Oh, that's right. And you can't, when you're in a when you're in a position of power, authority, like the chief, you can't call the jury system into doubt. They're the bulwark against wrongful convictions, and that's what this would have been. And I think that's what Justice Malloy was saying when she apologized to Mr. Zamir. You don't hear apologies from a judge to a defendant very often. The only time I've ever heard of a judge apologizing to a defendant is the Court of Appeal when they're overturning a wrongful conviction. For instance, all of Charles Smith's convictions right. that get overturned. They often will apologize to the defendant for what they've been through. You don't see it in trial courts. So, I interpret that as Justice Malloy saying, this would have been a wrongful conviction. That's as close as I've seen to a judge saying, this gentleman is factually innocent. Not a reasonable doubt. He is factually innocent.
How closely did you follow the case throughout the 5 weeks? We all have to fit different stuff in, but I'm sure you paid significant attention to it.
I followed it in the media.
Yeah.
As close as I could, but I wasn't in the courtroom.
The undercover aspect is an interesting one, and as you know, the OPP has been asked by Myron Demke to evaluate how Toronto handles plainclothes cop situations, undercover cop situations. That's a really tricky part of this process. There may not be much of a defense, and this is a pure hypothetical. There may not be much of a defense if they're all wearing proper police uniforms. Then there isn't much argument for, well, I wasn't sure if they were cops or not. But you look at the photos of the officers, including, rest his soul, the poor deceased constable, and none of them would come across as cops, would they?
No, none. And, that's... That was one of my other comments, you see people like this, dressed like this, approaching your vehicle, depending on what evidence you accepted. Maybe they're pounding on the windows, the car, try and get them to open up. They're yelling at them. You assume that they're officers? I sure wouldn't. And, is it the position of the police that simply saying I'm a police officer mandates that you believe them? Because seems to me that gives carte blanche to, carjackers to simply say, hey, I'm a police officer, open up your door. We don't expect citizens to do that, right? They have to have some reason to believe that the officers are officers, hence the uniform, the badge, things like that. It's a undercover plainclothes police work is difficult, it's dangerous, but some of the procedures and their protocols I think make it more dangerous than it needs to be.
What about the publication ban? I thought about this a fair bit in that he was charged. This incident happened on July 2nd. He's charged pretty quickly with first degree murder, doesn't get out on bail in September. And as was documented by his lawyer, Scott, he missed the birth of his second child because his wife was in her third trimester when this horrible incident/accident happened. But I often wonder if a publication ban does more harm than good, because it got, they have to own their words. It got a lot of politicians out there saying, this is ridiculous, this is terrible. And that might be, upon reflection, the emotion that they have. But they're in positions of responsibility. Again, they're not some rando on social media. These are important people. Mayor of the city at the time, John Tory. Premier of the province, Doug Ford, still the premier. What was your observation of that? And would a publication ban... the lack of a publication ban at least give more context as to why he was given bail in the first place?
Well, it would. It could have. I think in hindsight, it's easy to second guess. But, in the moment, you want to preserve trial integrity. You don't want people who might be trying the case down the road to have any advanced information that hasn't been tested. I understand why the publication ban at the bail was put into place. I think it was probably the right call at the time. But like you say, educated persons in authority like the premier, mayor of Toronto, mayor of Brampton, ought to know better than to make comments like that. I mean, John Tory's a lawyer. Doug Ford certainly has advisors who probably could have told him, don't make a comment on this. None of that seems to have happened. Why, I don't know. But, they ought to know better whether there's a publication ban in place or not. They ought to know, look, a test has been made. A judicial officer has heard evidence and decided that this person has justified his release. there's minimal, if any, safety to the public.
Scott, really appreciate your insight on this. Thanks very much for coming on the show.
Anytime.
Scott Reed joining us, partner at Edward H. Royal and Partners. Hey, appreciate your time so much. Thanks for listening to Toronto Today podcast. And we're back live on the air 5:30 to 9. Hope to hear you then.